I think getting some sun exposure is good for humans. And I would contend that it's a nutrient that you need. Just understand the dosing. Like anything else, there's a proper dose. Significantly improved my son's behavior. Check out this review on bone marrow and liver from Heart and Soil Supplements. I got these for my son. He has a speech delay. We strongly suspect autism. I know the diet can really help some children grow, develop, heal, and even possibly outgrow the disorder. This can be challenging as many children, my son included, who suffer are extremely picky eaters. After trying and failing at getting him to eat organ meats, I heard of these supplements. I wasn't sure at first, but after giving them to him for a few weeks, two pills, now 3 to 4 daily, I cannot wait to buy more. I notice he has more energy and focus. On days I forget to give them, as rare as it is, he has more mood issues and less focus and energy to do the things he loves. I have hope for the first time in a while. This means a lot. The results have been so good that I now have his little brother taking them too. Being pregnant, I have also started taking them in addition to my normal routine of eating heart and liver. Thank you, Heart and Soil, for teaching me the best investment is in our health. If you are thinking of buying these, I hope you will do it for you and your family. Bone marrow and liver contains grass-fed, grass-finished liver and bone marrow, two incredibly nutrient-rich sources from cows exclusively sourced in New Zealand. Our supplements are always packaged in glass, the finest desiccated organ supplements on the market. Check us out at heartandsoil.co. Bone marrow and liver and our other supplements from Heart and Soil are all informed sports certified, which means they are pure, they are third-party tested for any contaminants, and they are clean. All right, guys, on this week's podcast, I wanted to talk about skincare, sunscreen, sunlight, what you can do to protect your skin, what you may be doing that is harming your skin, what you should and should not eat to have good, healed, radiant skin, how you might heal skin issues like eczema, psoriasis, or acne, and all of the harmful things that may be in your sunscreen and what sort of alternatives you can use to protect yourself from the sun this summer. I hope you're going to get out in the sun this summer, and I hope this podcast is valuable for you. Also want to give a shout out to my sponsors. This podcast is free and they make this possible. I want to start with my friends at White Oak Pastures. You can find them at whiteoakpastures.com. The folks at White Oak Pastures are amazing. This is a sixth generation family farm based in Bluffton, Georgia. I've been there. It's amazing. The meat is delicious. They sell organs. They're a great source for obtaining meat and organs, tallow for your family. If you are ordering online and you can't get them where you are, find them at whiteoakpastures.com. They are really the pioneers and some of the trailblazers in the regenerative agriculture movement. I love these folks. You can get 10% off your first order using the code CARNIVOREMD at whiteoakpastures.com, and you can get 5% off your recurring orders as listeners of this podcast using the code CARNIVORE5 on all of your future orders at White Oak Pastures. So CARNIVORE5 or CARNIVOREMD to get 10% off your first order. Find them at whiteoakpastures.com. Also want to give a shout out to my friends at MarekHealth.com. That's M-A-R-E-K health.com. You can use the code Paul for 10% off your first lab order. Merrick is the premium telehealth platform out there, and they allow you to order your own labs and have self-service lab tests with guided optimization. I love the self-service labs because it's hard to go to a doctor and get them to order the labs you want. When I'm in the States, I love working with Merrick to get blood work. If you listen to my blood work podcast from last week, I did my blood work through them. They're great to work with. I can get whatever labs I want. It's affordable. And I partnered with Merrick to make a Carnivore MD panel. It's priced as low as $243 below the discount with my name Paul as 10% off. So you can get even cheaper amount with the discount. And these are the labs that I think are the most effective. It's not a fully comprehensive panel, but it's a best bang for your buck panel because I didn't want to make something that was massive for those of you that just want the really nitty gritty best stuff. So you can find them at MarekHealth.com. Use the code Paul for 10% off your first lab orders, or you can sign up to have guided optimization. You can work with a patient care coordinator, you can work with a provider, you can work with a doctor to get feedback on your labs, to get supplement recommendations or dietary recommendations based on your lab work. They're really good folks. They're co-owned by Derek for More Plates, More Dates. They know a lot about hormones, supplementation, and health optimization. I think they're amazing. And understanding what's going on in your labs, if you listened to my podcast last week, is critical. So check them out, MarekHealth.com. Use the code Paul for 10% off your first lab order. Check out the Carnivore MD panel if you want my personal best bang for your buck recommendations. Also going to give a shout out to my friends at Jouv, J-O-O-V-V.com. You can go to juve.com/Paul to get a special discount on your first order with the code Paul on qualifying orders. And how appropriate that I'm reading a supported ad for Juve as a sponsor of this podcast on a podcast about sunlight and summer, because light is critical for human health. And we know that one of my non-negotiables is getting my daily dose of red light therapy. Thankfully, I live in a place with a lot of sun. And in addition to that, I'll sit in front of my Juve every night because I love it. It's so relaxing and easy to use. You've probably heard about Juve's before. That's J-O-O-V-V. I use my device daily to support healthy cellular function. And I think that's the foundation of health. A lot of you probably can't get as much sunlight as I do in Costa Rica. So I think having a red light device in your home is a great idea. They've been shown to reduce muscle pain, inflammation, enhanced sleep, improved testosterone, potentially, at least in animal models, which is compelling. And I think even in humans, if you heard in the podcast, ultraviolet light certainly does. Red light, I think, is beneficial as well. Faster muscle recovery. Specifically, I think my favorite benefit is that it helps me relax at night and it seems to improve my sleep. I've been recommending Juve for years. Their devices are simply the best. They were really the pioneers in the space and they have incredible quality. So go to Juve, joovv.com/Paul. And check them out. You have a special offer for all of my listeners, and you can find that by using the code Paul with a qualifying order. joovv.com/Paul. Pick up a Juve today. Some exclusions may apply. Last but not least, got to give a shout out to my friends at shirttailcreek.farm or on Instagram at shirttailcreekfarm. You can use the promo code CarnivoreMD20 to get $20 off your first order from Shirttail Creek. They're a regenerative farm in Brenham, Texas, owned by Sam and Carolyn Moffitt. I love it. I see these guys at the farmer's market when I go back to Austin, and I love supporting local regenerative agriculture. They produce 100% grass-fed and finished beef, pasture-raised pork, pasture-raised chicken, corn and soy-free pasture-raised eggs. The cool thing is that now they will ship to you online. They operate with an emphasis on improving their land and environment while producing unadulterated, nutrient-dense food for their community. So Sam himself eats an animal-based diet and runs his farm with a focus on serving the needs of the animal-based community. Find them at shirttailcreekfarm.com or Instagram at shirttailcreekfarm. When we do retreats for the Heart and Soil crew, we'll use meat from Shirttail Creek. I'm going back to Austin in May to do a podcast, and I'm going to get some meat from them at the farmer's market. Again, you can use the code CarnivoreMD20 to get $20 off your first order. They offer flat rate shipping in the lower 48, so they'll ship anywhere in the lower 48. They have a bunch of great bundles or a la carte options on their site. Find them at shirttailcreekfarm.com or Instagram at shirttailcreekfarm. Use the promo code CarnivoreMD20 for $20 off your first order from Shirttail. I love these guys and I'm happy to support local and now throughout the United States available regenerative agriculture. On to the podcast. As we approach summer in the Northern Hemisphere, I thought it would be interesting to talk about skincare, sunlight, how to protect the skin, how to support the skin, what things damage the skin, and then sunscreen. Many of you are preparing your beach bodies for the summer, which is amazing. I'm excited for you all to go out and get into warmer weather and do things outside. And this is always a fun topic for me to talk about. So let's go ahead and dive in. I want to start with some consideration of the skin and thinking about the skin, which is the dermis on the outside of our bodies, as one of the major membranes in our bodies that faces the outside world. The other membrane would be the gut. A very simplistic view of humans would be like a donut. The inside of the donut is your gut, with your mouth being one hole and your butt being the other hole. When you eat something, it goes through the middle of the donut and is exposed to all of the epithelium from your mouth to your butt. But I'm not going to talk about that epithelium today. I'm going to talk about the epithelia of your skin, the dermis of your face and your outside of your body, which is similarly exposed to an environment outside of you. Just like when you eat food, it is exposed to this epithelium on the inside of your body. And we know that certain foods can damage that epithelium. This is something I've talked about a lot. I think it's why it's very important to consider the foods you're eating. Lectins appear to be able to damage the epithelium, perhaps oxalates. Many things we take in, sometimes things that we think are healthy, can damage the inside of our bodies, leading to inflammation. If you heard the podcast I did a couple weeks ago with Georgie Dinkov, we talked about excess starches making their way into the colon, leading to fermentation there, leading to excess gram-negative bacterial overgrowth, leading to lipopolysaccharide or endotoxin production, and that leads to systemic inflammation. And similarly, when the skin on the outside of our bodies is exposed to things, either excess sunlight, and I'll talk about that in a moment, or moisturizers, creams, and sunscreens that we put on our skin that can cause problems with our skin as well. So just like we expose our gut to foods that we're taking in, our skin is exposed to the outside world and comes in contact with things that may damage it. Before I begin talking about what things I think may support skin health from the outside, things you can put on your skin, and what things you can put on your skin that would damage your skin health, let's talk about sunlight for a brief moment, because sunlight is perhaps the thing that all of us will quote unquote put on our skin. And the mainstream medical establishment essentially says there is no such thing as a healthy tan, that no amount of sun exposure is good for you. If you listen to mainstream dermatology, and I think unfortunately many people are leaning in this direction now, we should wear sunscreen all of the time. We should be in the sun as little as possible. And we should essentially live our lives in caves like naked mole rats. I suppose they want us to become subterranean species. And if we could all just move around in tunnels that were hermetically sealed and air conditioned, that would be better for all of us, right? Never mind the fact that we evolved as humans in the sun for hundreds of thousands of years. Now, just looking at skin tone, it's obvious that our ancestors moved away from the equator, and the Hadza, a group in Tanzania that I visited 2 years ago, clearly that lineage has remained at the equator. This is why these people have darker skin with more melanin. People that are from regions of the world that are closer to the equator have darker skin. People that are from regions of the world that are further from the equator seem to have lighter skin. This is probably because of some selective advantage to lighter skin, perhaps the fact that harvesting sunlight is beneficial for humans. There's not so much of a need for the protection of the melanin, and we know that ultraviolet radiation, we quote unquote know that that ultraviolet radiation is good for us, and we need the vitamin D from it. So you might think of people who are light-skinned as efficient sun harvesters. They don't need as much sun to make vitamin D, nitric oxide, and endorphins in the skin. And people who are darker-skinned, having a lineage from regions of the world closer to the equator, as less efficient but more protected people in those intense sun climates. But I think that I would posit, my strong feeling is that there is a healthy, quote, dose of sunlight for every one of us. Now that's gonna be different depending on your skin tone and your history and your lineage. So someone that is much darker skin is going to be able to tolerate and probably needs more direct sunlight to be healthy. And someone that is lighter skin doesn't need that much sunlight, but still needs some sunlight to be healthy. If you don't believe that there's any benefit to getting sunlight on your skin, or that you can just create some sort of synthetic sunlight by taking a vitamin D pill, consider these notions. The fact that sex hormones like testosterone, which is beneficial for both men and women, is made when you are in ultraviolet light in your skin. And there's clear evidence from studies that when you are in the sun, testosterone production is increased. There's also clear evidence that when you are in the sun, endorphins, these sort of quote feel-good hormones, are produced in your skin, as is nitric oxide, a compound that is beneficial for the blood vessels and is involved in their dilatation. So consider these two studies to corroborate the notion that sunlight does have benefit. We'll talk about the proper dose in a moment, but sunlight does have benefit for humans. So this is the first study. The title is Post-Exposure Persistence of Nitric Oxide Upregulation in Skin Cells by Irradiation with UVA Light. So essentially what the authors are talking about is that when you are exposed to ultraviolet light, in this case UVA, which is a certain wavelength of light versus UVB or other types of light, visible or invisible, nitric oxide is upregulated for some amount of time after that and provides beneficial effects. In this case, they say release of nitric oxide in the skin cells induced by moderate exposure to UVA in sunlight may be especially beneficial for some demographic groups such as the elderly, hypertensive patients, or those with impaired nitric oxide function, not only during exposure, but many hours and days after that. They talk about in the study in more detail the fact that when your skin is exposed, you have increased production of nitric oxide for up to 48 hours. In fact, it peaks at 48 hours and probably goes beyond that. So this is to say that if you perhaps went to Hawaii and got exposed to sun, hopefully you're not getting burned, you're getting the right amount of sun exposure, and we'll talk about what kind of sunscreen you may or may not want to use when you go to Hawaii, and then you go back to the United States to a more northern latitude like Boston or New York, there's going to be an increase in nitric oxide production from that sun exposure in your body, which is going to lead to lower blood pressures, more iNOS, inducible nitric oxide synthase, more blood vessel dilatation, all these things we think of as beneficial for days after you return from Hawaii, days. And it peaks at 48 hours after your exposure. So to say that you can simply take sunlight in a pill with vitamin D, I believe this is really false. You're missing these other benefits of ultraviolet light. And the case that I'm trying to make here is that sunlight in the proper dose has unique benefits for humans. I also believe vitamin D is beneficial for humans. If you want to get it in a pill, great, but you can probably get it in sun while you're doing these other things as well. The other thing to consider is this idea that ultraviolet radiation does affect sex hormone excretion. This study is done in males. I believe it's probably the same in females. And again, testosterone and other sex hormones are beneficial for males or females. This is an older study, but it's fun to find these old ones that have largely been forgotten by the mainstream press or the mainstream zeitgeist in the nutritional and health space. Title of this one is Influence of Ultraviolet Radiation Upon Excretion of Sex Hormones in the Male. If you look at this, they looked at not testosterone, but mostly androsterone. But you can see that exposure of the chest, back, or genitals, testicles in males, led to significant increases in the secretion, the production of these sex hormones when these regions of the body were exposed to ultraviolet light from the sun. You can see that in this graph, there was a significant bump in the secretion of androsterone from 5 irradiations of the chest, and that lasted for 12 to 14 days. A little bit less with 2 irradiations of the chest, but still 2 irradiations of the chest led to an increase in androsterone for 5-6 days. You have 5 irradiations of the genital region leading to an even bigger bump in androsterone lasting for 14 days, according to this graph. So you can see from those graphs, there's a clear increase in the production of male sex hormones when your skin, your chest, your back, or your genitals are exposed to sunlight. Whether or not this is an argument that you should be sunning your balls is questionable, but you should at least be getting your chest, your back, or some part of your body, men and women, into the sun for endorphins, which feel good. That's kind of an interesting evolutionary loop telling us the sun feels good. Nitric oxide for blood vessel dilatation. There's a clear decrease in blood pressure and calming effect with both of those, and sex hormones in both men and women. And again, let's just revisit the idea of endorphins. Why would something that is programmed into your body to feel good, that is connected with the release of endorphins, be bad for you? How can mainstream medicine say there is no such thing as a healthy tan? Don't believe me? Here's the Mayo Clinic. There's no such thing as a safe, healthy tan. From May 30th, 2017. This article is specifically focused on tanning beds, which are a whole separate issue, but you can find the same position taken by doctors talking about sunlight as well. And ironically, they say, and I quote, "The bottom line is there's no such thing as a healthy tan unless it's an artificial tan that comes from a spray or a lotion." And I find that to be incredibly myopic and misguided, because if you look at spray tans and lotions that darken your skin, there are many harmful chemicals in there that are horrible for you. I would say those are not healthy in any way, shape, or form, and that is not the way to darken your skin. Now, we don't fully understand how a tanning bed might be different than real sunlight. Real sunlight is full of different wavelengths that are visible, invisible, IR, infrared, ultraviolet, and a tanning bed is basically UVA and UVB in different ratios depending on the tanning bed you're using. So it's difficult to say with a tanning bed if the lack of those visible wavelengths, perhaps the lack of those infrared wavelengths, makes a difference. But what I would say is that actual real sunlight is something that is healthy for humans in the proper doses, and there is such thing as a safe tan. And tanning lotions and spray tans are horrible for you because of the compounds in there that darken your skin that are going to have other negative effects on your physiology, similar to sunscreens, which I'll get to in a little bit. If you want more detail about what's actually in these spray tans, read the labels. Many of them have phthalates or parabens. They have things that are endocrine disruptors in them. The main agent in these formulas that darkens your skin is called dihydroxyacetone, which can be problematic for humans. The way that it darkens your skin is by forming a malleured compound, linking itself to proteins in your skin, specifically keratins. This is not a good thing. We just do not know this is safe for humans. And why would you put things on your skin that are going to darken your skin like that when you don't understand what they're doing long-term for humans? I think that's very clear that this compound can even penetrate into the stool and the pee, like the compounds that are in sunscreens, and that can be very problematic for humans long-term. So we don't really understand what the long-term effects of this compound are, forming Maillard products, Maillard reactions with keratins in the stratum corneum of your skin. Sounds like a bad idea to me. Why not just get into sun at a healthy level like humans have been doing for a long time? And then you avoid all of the fragrances, the parabens, the phthalates, the xenoestrogens, the endocrine disruptors in these spray tans as well. How much sun is the right amount for you based on your skin tone? I think that you can tell this based on your history. If you're very light skinned, then go into the sun gradually, get small amounts of sun exposure, not to the burning level, and gradually develop a tan over the course of a summer when there is more sun in the sky. There's also this notion of what is called a solar callus, which is essentially gradually letting your skin become darker. And anecdotally, I've had friends from the UK who came to visit and actually stayed in Costa Rica. My friend Tom was here for a while, and he was white in the UK, but got to be very, very dark. So even people from regions of the world that are far from the equator can gradually develop quite a tan depending on your body's ability to produce melanin in the skin. Now, the way that he did this and the way that I think is best to do this is morning and evening sunlight, not direct sunlight during the middle of the day. That's quite intense for people unless you have a solar callus, which is essentially synonymous with a tan built up. So here in Costa Rica, when I go surfing in the middle of the day, I'm going to wear a sunscreen on my face that does not have seed oils in it. I'm actually developing a sunscreen for you guys, so stay tuned for this. The sunscreen I use is a prototype. It has tallow and zinc. It's super simple, so there's no garbage in there, but I'll use the sunscreen on my face if I'm going to get significant sun on my face. And if I'm going in the morning or the evening, I may not put sunscreen on. And in Costa Rica, I'm so close to the equator, this may only be until, if I'm gonna be in the sun after 8 a.m., then I'm gonna wear some sunscreen. But being in the sun from, the sun rises at about 5:30, 6, 7, 8 o'clock, maybe even 8:30 without sunscreen could be a good way to develop a solar callus. And then being in the sun maybe 2 hours before the sunset is the other time when there's some ultraviolet radiation, depending where you are, but not as intense an amount. And that's a good way to gradually develop some color in your skin, get this solar callus, this gradual tan without getting burned. So see what works for you. So what do you do if you're going to a place that has a lot of sun? You're going to Hawaii, maybe you're coming to Costa Rica in the middle of a very sunny time. Well, then you're gonna have to do a couple of things. You probably wanna cover your skin up in the middle of the day with rash guards and hats or long leggings. I've seen people surfing with full leggings and full sleeve rash guards on and wearing hats. That's one way to do it. Or you would want to use a sunscreen that doesn't have garbage in it. And I'll get into sunscreens at the end of this podcast and reapply it consistently throughout the day. But I think the best thing to do is to cover up if you're fair skinned or you don't have a significant tan and you're in the middle of the day during intense sunlight. But getting some sun on your skin is a healthy thing, I contend, for humans. It always makes me happy at the end of a summer to see my niece and my nephew have actual tan on their skin. And I'm grateful that my sister lets them get out in the sun with as much skin exposed throughout the summer so that they get that as they're growing up as well. And interestingly, there's lots of epidemiology that observational studies to suggest that people who grow up closer to the equator have lower rates of autoimmune disease. We see this trend very clearly with things like multiple sclerosis, but also with other autoimmune diseases. So could this possibly be connected with vitamin D levels? Could this possibly be connected with other programming that's going on in our bodies with real sunlight exposure? I think it's quite intriguing, a hypothesis. So I think getting some sun exposure is good for humans, and I would contend that it's a nutrient that you need. Just understand the dosing. Like anything else, there's a proper dose. Now, if you look on Twitter, or anytime I've posted about this on any social media platform, one of the most engaged threads that I've ever had, or posts that I've done in terms of comments, is talking about the removal of seed oils from the human diet, from individuals' diets, and how much less likely they are to get burned. I've had Tucker Goodrich on the show a number of times talking about seed oils. He has shared his own personal anecdotes. Tucker's quite fair-skinned, and if you look on Twitter, there are so many threads about this. Just ask your friends, or I can put a post on Twitter and you guys can see this. Who out there is getting burned less when they've eliminated seed oils from their diet? And there's a good reason for this. The mechanistic hypothesis would be that when you eat seed oils, which are corn, canola, sunflower, safflower, soybean, peanut, etc., these are enriched in omega-6 linoleic acid. So this is an 18-carbon polyunsaturated fatty acid found in 20 to 30% in canola oil, 35% in corn and peanut, 45 to 55% in soybean oil. Different oils have different amounts of linoleic acid. But what we know about humans that's different than other animals is that when humans eat linoleic acid, it gets stuck in our membranes. We store it. So especially your fat cells, which is really the only way to look at your stores as a reflection of your consumption of linoleic acid. This is a problem with most of the research on linoleic acid. I've spoken about that in the past on previous podcasts. But what we know is that when you eat linoleic acid, whether it's your corn chips, your chips and guac, your queso, whatever, your refried beans with seed oils, all sorts of things have seed oils hiding in them, your chipotle, you are accumulating that linoleic acid in your cell membrane. So the more seed oils you eat, the more linoleic acid will be in your cell membranes. Well, guess what? Your skin is one massive collection of cell membranes. This is a phospholipid bilayer that is facing the sun. So just like your gut is a single layer of cells, and all cells in the human body have a phospholipid bilayer, meaning two phospholipids kind of facing tail to tail, with one side of the phospholipid bilayer facing the inside of the cell and the other side of the phospholipid bilayer facing out into the environment. Well, on your skin, that environment is your actual outside environment with sunlight hitting it. In your gut, it's the inside of your gut with all of those potentially damaging compounds from plants. This is a hypothesis that I've talked about many times in the past, hitting your gut epithelium. So this is the idea that these cells, if they are enriched in linoleic acid, well, linoleic acid is a polyunsaturated fatty acid that is much more susceptible to oxidation. That's just basic organic chemistry. If you take a bottle of linoleic acid, which is 18-carbon omega-6 polyunsaturated fatty acid, and you put it next to a bottle of a saturated fat like palmitic or stearic acid, you can look for indices of oxidation in those two oils over time with pressure, heat, whatever, light, and the linoleic acid will oxidize much more quickly than a stearic acid, a palmitic acid, which are saturated fats. As an aside, this is why I'm not a fan of cooking with olive oil. Though olive oil is mostly monounsaturated, it still has a lot of unsaturated oils, this monounsaturated fat, oleic acid, and it contains a significant amount of linoleic acid. So 15, 20% linoleic acid. Much better fats to cook with are things like tallow, which have less monounsaturated fat, way more saturated fat, and very small amounts of linoleic acid. For reference, tallow has around 2% or less linoleic acid. Butter is about 2% relative to 20, 30, 40, 50% linoleic acid in the seed oils I described earlier. So think about the oils you're eating and how that's creating the cell membranes in your body and how fragile those cell membranes can become when they are enriched in linoleic acid. What sort of research do we have to back this up? Well, mechanistically, I think all that makes a lot of sense, but there is some very interesting research about this that I will show you guys now, looking at the fats that people are eating and the incidence of skin cancer, and looking at moisturizers that are put on the skin and what happens when you put linoleic acid directly onto the skin. So the conversation to this point has been, what happens when you eat linoleic acid? You will populate the cell membranes from the inside out, meaning that you will digest the linoleic acid and all the cells of your body will become enriched in linoleic acid, including the cells of your skin. But putting linoleic acid containing oils of any significant amount on your skin is probably a horrible, horrible idea. And what is the base of most sunscreens? It's sunflower oil, raspberry seed oil, argan oil, jojoba, whatever oil that has a significant amount of linoleic acid. Look at your sunscreen. Almost certainly it contains a high linoleic acid seed oil that's going on your skin. And I will show you research in a moment that putting linoleic acid on your skin leads to increased inflammatory markers. Yet this is what's in your moisturizer. This is what's in your sunscreen. And this is why we need to be careful of what we put on our skin. So let's start with this study. The title is Fat Intake and Risk of Skin Cancer in US Adults. It's from 2018, Cancer Epidemiology Biomarkers. The results clearly show that increased consumption of polyunsaturated fats, higher intake of omega-6 fat, was associated with increased risks of squamous cell, basal cell, and melanoma. Omega-3 fat intake was associated with risk of basal cell carcinoma, and not with squamous or melanoma. No other fats were associated with melanoma risk. The associations were similar in men and women. Now, the conclusion is very clear. Polyunsaturated fat intake modestly associated with increased skin cancer risk. I believe the increase in risk was around 18%, but it was statistically significant. This is epidemiology, so you can't draw causative inference, but I have trouble making any sort of other explanation for this. So this gets into complex discussions of epidemiology, observational studies, and what they mean. We probably just need to do an interventional study here, but it's going to be a very hard thing to study in interventional studies. Now, the problem here that I see in any sort of alternative explanation is that generally what we know from other research is that people who are eating polyunsaturated fats are trying to be healthy because we've been told that polyunsaturated fats are healthy. I think this is wrong advice for the last 70 years. So people that are eating polyunsaturated fats are doing other healthy behaviors. They're probably in the sun less than people who are eating saturated fat, who don't care about these things. They probably use more sunscreen than people who eat saturated fat. Generally, if you look at the westernized world, people that eat saturated fat are having other unhealthy behaviors because they're disregarding the quote mainstream health advice. I believe that saturated fat is healthy for them, but they're doing other unhealthy behaviors. Things like riding motorcycles, drinking alcohol, not going to doctors, et cetera, et cetera. And people that are eating more unsaturated fat are putting canola oil on their salad, thinking they're doing the right thing and associating that with other health behaviors. So when things like this come up, I think that's a really compelling finding because generally people that have more unsaturated fat in their diet are listening to mainstream health advice, incorrect health advice, be it as it may, but they're listening to mainstream health advice and doing other healthy behaviors. So to see that association makes me very concerned that there is an actual mechanism happening here. And this next study that I'll show you makes that even more clear because it's an interventional study. So this is one of the coolest studies I've seen in a while. Lipid ingredients in moisturizers, so we're not talking about sunscreen now, we're talking about moisturizers, can modulate skin responses to ultraviolet light in barrier-disrupted human skin in vivo, which means in the human body. This is an interventional study. And what did they do? They put a couple of different things on the skin and they looked at the inflammatory responses. So linoleic acid caused increased inflammation in the skin. So clear evidence that putting linoleic acid on your skin is harmful for you. The other study showed that people who were eating more linoleic acid had more skin cancer. So one is going from the inside, this one is going from the outside, but the mechanism is probably the same. Interestingly, in this study, they found that putting cholesterol on the skin, do you want to take a guess? That decreased inflammation in the skin, probably because cholesterol is a key part of your cell membranes as well. But wait, Paul, isn't cholesterol bad for you? Listen to last week's podcast, guys. Listen to all the podcasts I've done on lipids and why I'm not worried about it. Obviously, this is cholesterol going on your skin as opposed to in your body. But I think that in general, it's another interesting point to suggest that cholesterol is a valuable molecule for humans. When you are making cholesterol in your liver, a pathway you wouldn't want to disrupt with something like a statin, you are putting that in your cell membranes. You are using that cholesterol to make hormones in your body, all essential, beneficial things. How does that cholesterol move in your body? Oh, a little molecule called LDL, which is, yes, an ApoB-containing lipoprotein that most people in the health space think is harmful for you. I think that makes absolutely no sense, and I've spoken about why and shown data on previous podcasts about LDL and ApoB, et cetera. But interesting study to show that putting cholesterol on your skin can cause decreased inflammation. And in this study, they also note that statin users have higher rates of skin cancer. That's a side effect of statin use that I've never heard anyone talk about. But it makes sense because cholesterol being made by your liver as a valuable portion of human nutrition, of human physiology, goes into your cell membranes and has a protective effect in those membranes. Interrupting the formation of cholesterol with a statin, a pharmaceutical drug that inhibits an enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase, that is associated with an increased rate of skin cancer. Again, it's only an association, but that's a compelling association that should make us very curious and maybe get us thinking about not fearing cholesterol so much. Perhaps we should be celebrating this. Obviously, context matters, and the context should always be thought of how metabolically healthy you are. If you have questions about metabolic health, go back and listen to last week's podcast on my blood work where I talk about that in more detail. Here's one more study which I found very compelling. The title is Melanoma and Dietary Lipids. And what we see here is that in people who had more linoleic acid in their fatty tissue, which is a good indicator of linoleic acid consumption. So this is not the same type of observational study where they are asking people what they eat. They're actually sampling the linoleic acid in the fatty tissue. They see a clear correlation with increased melanoma in people who have more linoleic acid in the fat. Linoleic acid in the fat is a clear indicator of how much linoleic acid you've eaten. So eating more linoleic acid is associated with worse melanoma in these people. That's pretty scary, but again, but it supports the same idea that I've been discussing, that what you eat can affect your cell membranes, and having more polyunsaturated fatty acids in your cell membranes can affect your risk of cancers, can be a risk factor or directly connected when you apply linoleic acid to inflammation in your skin, which is almost certainly a precursor for skin cancers, aging. Inflammation in your skin is not a good thing at all in any way, shape, or form. No one listening to this, I think, would believe that inflammation in the skin would be a good thing. So those are three really compelling studies that make me curious and very concerned about either application of linoleic acid to my skin or consumption of linoleic acid from a skin health perspective. But your mainstream doctor would probably never tell you to avoid canola oil. Maybe it's good you're listening to this podcast. The other thing I'll note here is that I used to use a sunscreen called Badger. I have no association or affiliation because I wouldn't want to. This is a so-called, quote, healthy sunscreen. I'm sorry, Badger, but one of the main ingredients is sunflower oil. So this Badger sunscreen doesn't have oxybenzone and avobenzone, compounds that are harmful in mainstream sunscreens, quote unquote, that I'll talk about, but it does have sunflower oil, which is not a good thing for humans. So I stopped using that a while ago. I did use it for a little while, and I've just switched to tallow-based sunscreen. Again, I'm developing prototypes for a company that I want to build to make it available to you guys so that you can actually get a really good sunscreen, something that I would use, that I would put on my niece and nephew or my kids in the future or whatever. So that's all to say that you have to be careful with even, quote, healthy sunscreen brands. The last thing I'll say about this is that it's pretty well known that any molecule with a molecular weight less than 500 grams per mole can penetrate the human skin, especially a lipid molecule like linoleic acid. So linoleic acid, I think, is 250 grams per mole, clearly within the range of molecule size that could go into your skin from your skin if you apply it onto the outside of your skin. So what else is problematic for your skin? This is something that I've talked about in the vegetable realm, and these are sorrelins and furanocoumarins, but mostly sorrelins. So what are sorrelins? This is PS, so like pterodactyl, but with an S, not a T, you get the idea. Sorrelins, P-S-O-R-A-L-E-N-S. Where are sorrelins found? They're found in parsnips, they're found in celery, they're found in carrots, they're found in this Apiaceae family of foods, and then furanocoumarins are found in citrus, with most of the problem appearing to be in things like grapefruit. But there is really good evidence that sorrelins, if you were doing a celery juice cleanse or something, or eating tons of carrot juice, will accumulate in your skin, in your dermis. They can cross-link with DNA and then cause problems when exposed to the sun. There are documented cases of phototoxic injury with celery juice cleanses. This one specifically is in a 65-year-old woman who was doing a celery juice cleanse. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. She was trying to be healthy, but maybe listening to the bad advice. I don't think celery juice is a great thing for humans in general. I don't see any point to drinking it, especially not in large amounts. Here is a case report of this severe phototoxic burn following celery ingestion. And you can see here, 65-year-old woman, severe generalized phototoxic reaction following visit to a sun tanning bed. She'd been consuming a large quantity of celery root. So actually, this wasn't celery juice. It was celery root, also known as celeriac, which contains sorrelins and also oxalates. And you can see here, she has essentially bullae, these sort of bubbles on the edge of her skin. She has bullous blistering from this phototoxic injury. This is not uncommon. Basically, the idea or the concern is, if you are eating lots of these foods, could you be predisposing your skin to damage long-term? If you look at, and this is actually quite interesting, there is research correlating the consumption of citrus, most strongly grapefruit, with melanoma. Citrus consumption and the risk of cutaneous melanoma. This is the title. And if you read this, you will see that the strongest association was with grapefruit. Grapefruit showed the most apparent association with the risk of melanoma, which was independent of other lifestyle and dietary factors. Maybe you don't want to be drinking grapefruit juice every day. I think orange juice is probably fine at a reasonable level. I certainly drink a good amount of orange juice. But it's something to consider in terms of your citrus consumption. I don't really like grapefruit. I don't eat that at all. But be aware that excess citrus consumption could also lead to this. Maybe it's also additive. Are you doing citrus juice? Are you doing grapefruit juice with your celery juice? Are you also eating parsnips and other foods that have these sorrelins? Think about your overall sorrelin consumption. Here's a paper about sorrelins, natural toxicants in human foods, sorrelins in raw and cooked parsnip roots. So there's a whole family of these foods that contains these sorrelins, carrots, again, parsley, celery, citrus has these, and furanocoumarins. Just be aware of your total overall exposure there in terms of potential for skin damage or photosensitivity if you find yourself being a very photosensitive person. So if you are photosensitive, if you burn easily, I would get rid of those foods. Grapefruit, you probably could eat some oranges, or maybe get rid of oranges completely. Celery, parsley, parsnips, all these foods, carrots, and get rid of seed oils, and I bet that your skin will get better or you will not be as photosensitive. Definitely, I think that would be a good intervention if you were super photosensitive. Think about how much of those things you are eating. I want to talk about sunscreen as well before I wrap up this podcast. And then at the end of the podcast, I will talk about nutrients and foods you can eat to support your skin health. So far, I've talked about what things to avoid, and then I want to talk about what things you can do to support your skin health. But you should know that mainstream sunscreens are no good. Do not use banana boat. Do not use any of these tropical, whatever, coconut, banana, whatever, sunscreens that have avobenzone, octobenzone, any of these octocrylenes, these crazy ingredients. Basically, you only want to use a sunscreen that is a zinc-based sunscreen. And I would only use a sunscreen that is a tallow-based zinc sunscreen. And those are rare. Again, stay tuned. I want to build it for you guys to make it easier for you to get them. But there are multiple studies now about the ingredients in mainstream sunscreens being found in the plasma. So the blood, the poop, and the pee. And that is not a good thing because these are potentially carcinogenic. They have been outlawed in Europe as carcinogens. And we know that these things are not good for humans, potentially hormone disruptors. So here's a study, the effect of sunscreen application under maximal use conditions on plasma concentration of sunscreen active ingredients. It's a randomized controlled trial. They say in this preliminary study involving healthy volunteers, the application of four commercially available sunscreens under maximal use conditions resulted in plasma concentrations that exceeded the threshold established by the FDA for potentially waiving some non-clinical studies of toxicology for sunscreens. So, not a good thing. We actually don't understand what these things do long-term, and there is concern that they are linked with cancer and endocrine disruption. Don't use these guys. You can go to the Environmental Working Group. They have a huge amount of information about the different sunscreen ingredients. Basically, I'll make it simple for you. If you see a sunscreen, it has any funny words other than zinc, don't use that one. Don't use it. I wouldn't put that on my kids. I don't have kids, but in the future, future kids wouldn't get it. My niece and nephew don't get it. Don't put this on your friends or your family. Don't put those things on your face, ladies, if you're going out during the day. And ladies who are using moisturizers, don't use moisturizers that are high in linoleic acid. We talked about that before. So I think that most people will need to use sunscreen at some point. I use sunscreen when I'm out in the ocean during the day now, or if I'm out past like 8:30 in the morning surfing, and I have a tallow and zinc sunscreen prototype that I'm developing, and it works great. I don't get burned. And it's a much healthier, safer option. Now, to add to this discussion, I think that the best moisturizer is tallow. This may come as a surprise to some of you, but just put beef fat on your face and you will love the way it feels. It's non-comedogenic, doesn't make zits on your face. It absorbs into your skin, and the naturally occurring vitamin E in tallow is good for collagen production in your skin. So you won't smell like beef, although if you're in this audience, anyone around you might like if you smell like beef and they might try and lick your face. But when I get home from surfing, even though I use a tallow-based sunscreen, I often will put tallow on my face during the day and it feels really good. So thankfully, this trend is actually happening on social media platforms right now. I've seen people taking actually our fire starter from Heart and Soil. People have actually taken this supplement from Heart and Soil and broken open the capsules and put that tallow on their face. It's a high stearic acid tallow from the suet, which is the kidney fat of animals, or you can just use a regular tallow. This probably has a little better texture, the fire starter, but use whatever tallow you would like and put it on your skin. You will love the way it feels, and it's very healthy for your skin. So that's one thing that I would put on your skin. That's what I use for moisturizers, because the environment here in Costa Rica is quite humid. There's a lot of moisture in the environment. When I go to places like Austin or Los Angeles, it's much more dry to me, and it takes a little while for my skin to adjust, and I just put tallow on my face. You're welcome for saving you hundreds of dollars a month on skincare ingredients that you don't really need. Just use tallow. Just use beef fat. Just try and see. I think you guys will really, and gals will really be surprised by what this does for your skincare. And like so much less money per month for the tallow that's going to go on your skin than these skincare ingredients, either sunscreens or facial creams or moisturizers that probably have things in there that you don't actually want now that you've listened to this podcast. So what other nutrients should you be eating to support your skin? Collagen is a big one, easy. But I think you should be getting collagen from your food. Collagen, hydrolyzed collagen is not absorbed that well. It's usually hoof and hide collagen. Obviously I'm biased, but my favorite collagen is in our skin, hair, and nails from hardened soil. It's trachea and scapula cartilage, which has been studied by John Pruden and appears to have specific peptides in it that help with wound healing. So that would be a good type of collagen that you might use in skin, hair, and nails from hardened soil, or just get your collagen from your food, make bone broth, or get a sort of collagenous cut of steak. If you're just eating a filet mignon, that may not have as much collagen as a skirt steak or something that has more of a fibrous texture to it. And if you don't like the texture, if it's too hard to chew, then use one of these meat tenderizers. They have these hammers with a bunch of points on them, and you can hammer the meat and tenderize it. So incidentally, my niece and nephew find skirt steak to be their most favorite steak. And I think skirt steak is my favorite steak too, maybe second only to like a hanger steak. But in some ways, I think a hanger is connected with a skirt. It's actually part of the skirt steak. It's just a specific part of the skirt steak that gets cut off, probably the most precious part of the skirt steak. But I like skirt steak. I like fibrous steaks. You can make these bone broths out of this collagen. That's going to be good for your skin. But other nutrients that we don't think about a lot are things like biotin. Where's biotin found? Liver. What about zinc? Zinc is helpful for wound repair, definitely helpful for skin barrier protection. Zinc is in meat and organs. Things like iron will be beneficial. Again, meat and organs. And saturated fats from animals in your skin and cholesterol will probably be beneficial to even eat. Again, your liver's going to make cholesterol, but eating some cholesterol is a good thing. Egg yolks, meat has cholesterol. All the meats have about the same amount of cholesterol. Not many people know this, but fish has the same amount of cholesterol in it as red meat because it's just in the cell membranes between these. The thing about red meat that gives it a bad rap is that it's higher in saturated fat, which raises LDL. I talked about the benefits of LDL earlier in this podcast. It won't make you insulin resistant, saturated fat. It will raise your LDL potentially a little bit, but I think in the setting of an insulin sensitive human, that's a good thing. I'll repeat that point just to emphasize it. In the setting of insulin sensitivity, a slight bump in your LDL is just fine. It's a good thing. And I don't have any concerns about that. Listen to my blood work podcast last week if you want to know about my labs and what my LDL is at. And there's a whole deep discussion that I've had many times over on this podcast about why ApoB is not directly injurious to the endothelium, yada, yada, et cetera, ad nauseum. You guys can go back and listen to that. LDL is healthy for humans, not a big deal if you're insulin sensitive in any way, shape, or form. So eat your saturated fat, and your skin will be healthier. Trust me, your skin will look better. So I think an animal-based diet, which is something I'm a huge fan of, organs, either fresh or desiccated, like we make it hardened soil, meat, grass-fed meat, good fats from animals, fruit, honey. I've done many podcasts on why I don't fear those. Listen to the podcast last week with Georgie if you're fearful of fructose. And then raw dairy. This is a great diet. And in many ways, it's an elimination diet because I think that so many of the foods that trigger gut inflammation will trigger skin inflammation. And just this past week, I've had multiple people come up to me at the farmer's market. Two women specifically came up to me at the farmer's market here in Costa Rica and said, going on an animal-based diet significantly improved my acne. And what was it about that? Probably more saturated fat, less seed oils, less grains, less lectins and things like beans. So I am always evolving in my ideas, but I continue to be a huge fan of animal-based diets, organs, meat, fruit, honey, and raw dairy as a base to start. You can add things onto that if you want later, but do something simple. Do an elimination diet and watch your skin stuff get better. Next week's podcast is going to be with my friend Shannon, who's actually living in Costa Rica now. You guys may know her. She did an amazing collab with Joe Rogan where she shot a moving picture of Joe Rogan with an arrow while she was standing on her hands. So Shannon's amazing. She's an animal-based eater. She's pregnant. I think she's had an animal-based pregnancy. And she has a story about acne and food. So stay tuned for that next week. But look at these testimonials that we had on the Heart and Soil website of people having improvements in their skin with animal-based diets. So here's the first one. If you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see pretty incredible transformations. And both of these people, both of these women, we confirmed were not wearing significant amounts of makeup in the second after photos. They're not covering this up. Here's the second one. This one's a little harder to see, but you can see lots of discoloration around the bottom of her mouth and her lips and significant improvements with diet, specifically an animal-based diet. Now, this is not to say that an animal-based diet is the only way to improve your acne, but removing offending foods will improve your skin health without a doubt. And not putting garbage on your skin, linoleic acid that's going to inflame it, will improve your skin health. If you have acne, listen to this next sentence carefully. Your acne is not caused by dirt on your skin. It's not going to be fixed by excess crazy face washes and benzoyl peroxide and killing all the bacteria on your skin. That's not the problem. All of us have bacteria on our skin. Your acne is caused by inflammation in your body, triggering your immune system. It's an autoimmune inflammatory process that is connected with what you eat. So now we have to think about the epithelium inside of you and all the foods you may be putting inside of you that are worsening your skin on the outside. Again, beans, grains, nuts, and seeds, some vegetables even, leaves, stems, and roots can trigger this. This is why I'm not a huge fan of vegetables, guys. Lectins, oxalates, all sorts of things that can damage and inflame the gut. And if you saw my recent tweet, even some of the ingredients in dishwasher soaps and dishwasher rinse aids, specifically called alcohol ethoxylates, can damage the human gut in cell culture. It looks very compelling, this research. So understanding what's in your environment could heal your gut, and making those intentional decisions is a hugely powerful intervention for you to do in your own life. Many of you may know my personal story of improvement, massive improvements in my recurrent eczema with a carnivore diet, without a recurrence of eczema when I went to animal-based with fruit and honey. And there's actually some really interesting research done in dogs on skin conditions and food. So I'll show these. I've never seen anything like this in humans, but this is the effect of atopic dermatitis and diet on the skin transcriptome in Staffordshire Bull Terriers. Basically what they found was that they fed these dogs common commercial heat processed high carbohydrate food or kibble versus a high fat food, which is raw meat based diet. They had significantly less inflammation in the raw meat based diet for the Staffordshire Bull Terriers with atopic dermatitis, which is called eczema. It's a fancy name for eczema. So no surprise there. Dogs with eczema eating raw meat get way better. Imagine that. And can we parallel that into humans? Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think humans should just eat raw meat. I don't think you need to eat raw meat. But I think it's very compelling that when a species returns to its ancestral diet, its evolutionarily consistent diet, or more evolutionarily consistent diet, amazing things happen. Here's another study in dogs. The effect of kibble and raw meat diets on the peripheral blood mononuclear cell gene expression profile in dogs. These peripheral blood mononuclear cells are also known as neutrophils, PMNs, and they are a component of the immune system. No surprises here. The raw meat diet led to significant improvements in the cell gene expression profile in dogs. But wait, I thought red meat was inflammatory. Maybe people would say red meat is not inflammatory for dogs, but it is for humans. Except there's also no evidence that red meat causes inflammation in humans. But two very compelling studies in dogs showing improvements, resolution in eczema with a raw meat diet from kibble, and improvements in cell signaling at an inflammatory level, specifically in neutrophils, with a raw meat diet. So the idea here is not that you should eat a raw meat diet as a human. The idea is that you should simplify your diet. And I think an animal-based diet that has some carbohydrates will be much more sustainable long-term. You can cook your meat, it'll be just fine. But if you have a dog with those conditions, certainly try a raw meat diet for them and understand that kibble is essentially the equivalent of what most people eat on a standard American diet. So there are a lot of parallels there. So I covered a lot in this podcast and I hope it's useful and valuable to you all, especially as we approach summer. In the beginning of the podcast, I talked about the fact that the skin is an epithelial barrier on the outside of the body that is exposed to all sorts of insults, either from things we put on the skin or from the sun. I showed you evidence that sunlight exposure is beneficial for humans, both in terms of hormone production and in terms of nitric oxide and endorphins, things that are clearly beneficial for humans, and that cannot be replicated with a vitamin D supplement alone. And many of vitamin D supplements, if you follow my stories on Instagram, are actually packaged in seed oils. Small amounts, but it's going to add up over time. So if you want to take a vitamin D supplement, make sure it's in like an olive oil. I've never seen a vitamin D supplement in tallow, or better yet, just get in the sun. And then I talked about the problems with excess linoleic acid from seed oils in cell membranes. I showed evidence that people who are eating more seed oils, both in terms of adipose tissue levels and in terms of overall epidemiology and observational data gathering, have increased levels of, have increased rates of skin cancers, specifically squamous cell, basal, and melanoma. I also showed evidence that moisturizers containing linoleic acid are inflammatory at the level of the skin, and that cholesterol in the skin might actually be a good thing. In fact, it looks to be a very good thing. I talked about nutrients for the skin. I talked about sorrelins and the foods that contain them and how that might be harming your skin. I talked about the avoidance of seed oils. I talked about the importance of nutrients in meat and collagen for your skin. I showed some examples of improvement in acne on an animal-based diet. And we talked about the harms of sunscreen and what you might want to look for in a sunscreen before talking about some interesting studies in dogs looking at improvements in atopic dermatitis and inflammatory markers with intentional dietary decisions. Basically, my feeling is this. If you are thriving, why change anything about your diet? But if you are suffering and not finding answers, it's time to question your assumptions about nutrition. Do you assume that vegetables are beneficial? Do you assume that grains and beans and nuts and seeds are beneficial? Do you assume that seed oils are beneficial because that's what Harvard and mainstream medicine says? If those are assumptions that you're making, along with assumptions that saturated fat is bad or that meat is bad for you or that you don't need to include organs in your diet, then I think it's time to question those assumptions if you're not thriving. And so I hope that this type of information will serve as an impetus to you to be curious and to make your own decisions based on your own thought process. But I hope to provide you with just enough information to begin your own research and go on your own path of creative exploration into many of these things. And if you find what I do valuable, then I hope you will share it with people in your life that may also benefit. You can always check me out at carnivoremd.com. And there is a free calculator there for macros for an animal-based diet. If that is beneficial for you, obviously I'm on Instagram and all the socials at CarnivoreMD 2.0. So you can find me on all the socials there. And I hope this podcast was valuable, and I'll see you guys next week.